Kyle, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming into from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Deborah Dombrowski, and we're going to have to get our producer to get on the line to get the other guest, because there are two guests. Well, one is Deborah, and of course the other is Ray Youngin, and we'll just put him in on one of the other lines. So if you'll just call Ray Youngin on one of the other lines, probably line one, why, we'll be in good shape, because we're not going to take any calls this hour. We're going to be talking about the attack on Christianity. You see, if you listen to our program regularly, you realize, of course, that there is a plan for a new world order, a new world religion, and, of course, an enthronement of a new world leader. But, of course, if we're going to have a world religion, how do we destroy Christianity? Well, you can attack it from without, but that's not very effective. Far more effective is to infiltrate it from within, with the questions, well, really, certainly, we can't really believe the words of the Bible. After all, they were simply interpreted by men, written by men. Maybe we need some improvements of the this. Why we could tell people the secret. We could tell them about these secret messages that have been passed down through the years by the sages. And this information will really give you, put you in touch with what's really going on. Well, there's a new issue coming forward now. It has to do with the Moses Code. Deborah, are you there?
Hi, Stan.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, fine. Well, let's go to Ray then and see if he's here as well. Ray, are you there? Ray?
Yeah, now I can hear you better.
All right, fine. Well, of course, Ray Youngin is an author. We've had him on. We carry actually several of his books. Deborah Dombrowski is a publisher with Lighthouse Publications up in the Oregon. It's Oregon, isn't it, Deborah?
Right, right.
And of course, they put out information, a great deal of information, on the attack on the Christian church. And so, where are we going to start? So, who wants to start? Ray, do you want to start, or should we let Deborah start?
I'd like to have Deborah start first, because she did quite a bit of study here recently on it.
All right, and then Deborah, you pick up the story and you tell us what we're concerned about and why we should be concerned with what's happening in our church.
Okay, well, thank you, Stan. Well, I think the last time we were on, we talked about The Secret, and that was a book and a DVD that came out last year, 2007, and it was highly promoted by Oprah. And since then, it has been at the top of the New York Times bestseller list, I think for 59 weeks. So that's how long it's been and out there now, for that long. Actually, 61 weeks. And so this is kind of what we're going to talk about tonight. The Moses Code is kind of like a sequel to this, The Secret. And it takes, just so I don't know how much your readers or your listeners are familiar with The Secret, but it was basically about the law of attraction. And I know you've talked a lot about that on the show, so hopefully a lot of them understand what that is. With the Moses Code, some of the same people that were involved with The Secret are involved with the Moses Code. And they're saying that The Secret was okay, it was good in some ways, but it focused too much on what we can get for ourselves. The Moses Code supposedly takes people and humanity as a whole to the next level, to a level of where they say ultimately the world can be healed.
And of course, what the real problem is, of course, is they are putting these people in touch with the supernatural, and as they begin to concentrate on what they want, they don't understand they're opening their mind to terrible and sinister forces.
That's right. And with the Moses Code, it was difficult reading it, because you could see that it is really the complete opposite of the gospel message.
And right, well, what basically is the Moses Code? Could you go into that a little bit?
Sure. It stems really from, they say it stems from the story of the Bible about Moses when he went and first he had the experience with the burning bush where the Lord spoke to him, and then he went back to Pharaoh to ask for the people of Israel to be released. And then all of these great miracles happen. The Moses Code says that during that encounter that Moses had, when God said his name, I am, they're saying that that was actually a secret code that unleashed this incredible energy so Moses could do these miracles and actually bring the people out from bondage. But it wasn't that God had delivered them per se, it was really more that this thing was unleashed and opened up. So, in a nutshell, what the Moses Code is if the combination of mystical practices, various, and we can talk more about that, Ray will talk more about that, mystical practices combined with the repeating and chanting of this phrase, I am that I am, or just I am, you say the two kind of interchangeably. I mean, that would be what the Moses Code is. Now, there's a lot of variables going on there because they say it's how your mindset is, understanding that God is already in you. In fact, there was one, let me just turn to this real quick because it actually says that the key to everything is understanding, okay, let me read you this two sentences. What is true freedom exactly? It's simply the ability to express your divinity, capital D, in every situation, in every moment, and realize that you're the creator of the universe you experience. And the whole book is filled with many, many statements that back that up, that come right out and say, you are God. And we need to understand that we're all connected together. And so it is really the complete opposite of the gospel message that says we are all sinners, we're in need of a Savior, we're to worship our Creator through Jesus Christ, you see. So it's the complete opposite of what the Bible says.
And I think it's really so important to understand that this is basically an effort to confuse the message of the gospel.
Right.
And, of course, this is exactly what Rhonda Byrne says. Hang on there. Well, this is Dr. Stan and our guests this evening, Deborah Dombrowski and Ray Youngen. And of course, Deborah was explaining what the Moses Code really is. It goes back to the time of when Moses had supernatural experiences. He saw the burning bush, and then, of course, God said, I am. Tell them that I am who I am. And, of course, the whole idea is in the Moses Code that you as an individual out there have to recognize that you are God. You are divine. God is in you. You are part of God. Everything is part of everything else. And you will then repeat over and over again, I am that I am, something of that sort, I am. And of course that is really the message of the serpent in the Garden of Eden. For if you eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, then you shall be as God, and ye shall never die. And, of course, with all of the occult religions, this idea of reincarnation goes right along with the fact that we are God, and that's the most stupid thing in the world I ever heard. I mean, if we're God, we don't need a Savior. And, of course, all of this is aimed at destroying the Christian message. Ray, what's your thought on this?
Well, I have a number of thoughts, two major ones. First of all, I believe that the Moses Code is going to be as big or perhaps even bigger than the secret. You know, I think it's going to be something that's going to really sweep the country, if not the Western world, and it's going to give the New Age movement a very significant boost. I think that's why we wanted to come on your show. It's the DVD is coming out April 5th, mm-hmm. If it has the same production values and quality as the secret, then it'll see what made the secret so popular was not so much what it said, but how it said it. You know, if you watch the DVD, it's like almost like brainwashing. It's like just the way it's put together with the music and the editing and all these individuals coming on at a certain point being really assertive, you know, like it's almost like these infomercials you see on television that, you know, you got to have this, you know, your life's gonna be useless without this product.
Well, of course,
and that's how The Secret was. But The Secret lacked one important element, and I was really shocked when I found out this was missing, and that is The Secret did not have meditation in it. The Secret was mainly just about, you know, your thoughts being vibrations that go out into the universe, and The Secret had plenty about, you know, you are divine, you are God in human form, but there was no altering of consciousness in The Secret. And I thought, huh, this is interesting. I thought, I wonder if there's some kind of a, you know, plan here that, you know, first, maybe a lot, most people would not get so involved if there was meditation in it. So I thought, what if they had it so, you know, The Secret comes out and it's, people just think it's about positive thinking, you know. And, it, you know, millions of DVDs sold, millions of books sold. Every man and his third cousin, you know, gets impacted by this. And then once you have them all tuned in, then you bring in another book and DVD with meditation in it. And that's what we have in the Moses Code. We have an altering of consciousness. We have the silence. We have chanting mantras in conjunction with the breath. You know, I am that I am. And the mantra itself is, you know, utter blasphemy. I am that I am, you know, the name of God. In other words, the very mantra, the very thing that propels you into the supernatural realm is blasphemous. So I believe these two things are very significant.
Well, I think they are too, and I think that basically this whole idea of repetition puts you into almost like a hypnotic state.
Oh, and it does really put you into a hypnotic state.
Right, and basically, of course, this is what the music sets you up for, and some of the music we have in our churches today. The repetitious songs over and over and over again, and it puts your mind into neutral and opens you up then for the supernatural forces from the dark side to inhabit you. And the average individual really has no idea, and especially of course if you are a disciple of The Secret and you begin to use the law of attraction and you begin to find that the things that you think about and meditate upon and concentrate upon really do come to pass. You really do get that wonderful home you want. You get that new car that you want. You get all the benefits. You get the job that you want. And you think, my goodness, this really works. And the trouble is, it does work, but of course, it's the potential loss of your eternal salvation.
Yeah. But the thing about the Moses Code is, and this is the theme of the Moses Code, or the main attraction, or the main draw, is that it says, now, I didn't read the book. I read some of it, but Deborah read the whole book. That's why I had you, you know, talk to her originally, earlier in the show. But what I did read is that in the book, the concern was by a number of people that The Secret was based on the wants of the ego. In other words, stuff you wanted, you know, your own personal life. Whereas the Moses Code is more about establishing the kingdom of God on earth. In other words, the New Age God. In other words, you know, this would, the Moses Code would be a vehicle for changing the entire culture and the entire society. And we would have this entire world united in higher consciousness. It would be you've heard of Alice Bailey, right?
No, sure, I'm not.
Okay, the Moses Code would be more in tune with Alice Bailey's vision, you know, of a new vital world religion that we unite the world into a single entity, spiritual entity. And then once this was achieved, then we would have world peace and all our problems would be alleviated.
Well, I think our listeners out there who don't know who Alice Bailey was, she was a mystic, born in the latter part of the 1800s, and died about 1952-53, somewhere in there. And she, of course, got involved with the teachings of Helena Petrovna Blavatsky and Anna Besant and the Theosophists. And then she fell under the control of a mystical spirit called Zhuo Kul. And Zhuo Kul, she called the Tibetan Jwakul actually channeled a number of books to her, well over 20 books, and these are really the basis of the modern-day Luciferian movement, and this really is Luciferian.
Alice Bailey, sorry to interrupt you, but Alice Bailey is the woman who coined the term New Age.
Right.
That term actually comes out of her book.
In fact, she also coined the term points of light that, of course, George Herbert Walker Bush used. She coined the age term the New World Order, which, of course, George Herbert Walker Bush popularized. So certainly she's had a profound impact, and she certainly talks about this coming world religion and the coming world leader, and that's what it's really all about. Of course, this coming world leader is Lucifer himself, and she knew that. If you read her writings, it's very obvious that these people are Luciferian. They worship the other god. And so how is this, the Moses Code, going to bring us in tune with that?
Well, one of the things that Ray mentioned on April 5th, now the book was released in March. That's why we were able to get a copy of it. The DVD, The Moses Code, is going to be released right around the 4th of April. And on the 5th, at least on the weekend of the 5th, the idea is that right now they're putting together groups of people in many, many different cities throughout the world. And the plan is that on that day, all of these, and if you can actually go on the website and see the different groups being put together, and you can look at your own community, and it's surprising, you'll probably find one in your own community. And so everyone will come together on this particular day, and they're all going to meditate together with the idea that they're going to help bring peace to the Middle East is one of the things that they have planned. They believe that this is what they're supposed to do. You know, many of the people that are doing this, they don't understand that they cannot achieve the world peace. Maybe they will temporarily at some point, but it's a world that has gone haywire and is trying to find the answer without Jesus Christ.
Amen to that. Of course, really, if you read the writings of Alice Bailey, it's very very obvious that she's talking about bringing about war, but they're going to get all their people, you know, behind them by talking about peace, but that's never really what they want. They really want, of course, to eliminate most of the people in the world. And you read the writings of people like Barbara Marx Hubbard and others who were deeply involved with the occult, as well as, of course, Alice Bailey and many of her disciples involved in the population control movement, these plans for killing off billions of people throughout the world. And that seems so foreign to the average individual. They can't believe anybody in their right mind would want to do things like that. But of course, we're not dealing with people who are in their right mind. We're dealing people with putting themselves under the control of the prince of this world, especially as they begin chanting, I am who I am that I am, and basically saying that they are God. Well, how could any of us ever be God?
Mm-hmm.
It takes an awful inflated impression of yourself to think that you yourself are God.
Well, see, this is where the mystical aspect comes in. You know, it's not just an intellectual thing. You know, it's not just somebody thinking they're God. You know, intellectually, that's where the altered state comes in, because it creates a doorway into another dimension. And I believe that you've heard of Kundalini and the chakras, and that's very much integral to this this whole philosophy and this whole approach. People that empty their minds through repetition, you know, even if they use Christian mantras, the word mantra means to be liberated from thought, you know, create this void, or what's called the silence. And this silence is like a magnet that draws familiar spirits, and these familiar spirits then have access to the person's inner being, and they give them these powerful spirit experiences, which are called Kundalini and enlightenment and higher consciousness and the superconscious. And they have the sensation of a fire or energy consuming them. And you see it all throughout New Age literature. This, even in Christian mystical literature, St. John of the Cross talked about Kundalini-type fire
Hold that, Ray. We'll be back here in just a
moment. They don't just believe they're God.
We'll be back in just a moment. Ray, go ahead and pick up the story.
Yeah.
You were saying they just don't believe
it. Like I said, it's important for your listeners or people that are skeptical or even New Agers themselves or on their way to becoming New Agers that you're not going to believe your God unless you feel like your God. And that's what I discovered, on my research, that people believe their God because they are being seduced into believing their God by supernatural beings. The key is in Timothy, where Paul writes that in the latter times some shall depart from the faith, giving heed to seducing spirits and doctrines of devils. You know, seducing spirits, you know. And in 2 Thessalonians chapter 2, Paul talks about, you know, that day, the day of the Lord, shall not come except there come a falling away first, and then the man of sin be revealed, the son of perdition. And he said this falling away would be to the mystery of iniquity. And the word mystery there in the Greek is mysterion, which means, you know, the same as occult in Latin, you know, keep the mouth shut. In other words, it's hidden wisdom that has been esoteric, you know, all throughout human history. And now, for the first time in all of human history, this has suddenly burst forth, and they, you know, that's why they call it the New Age. We're entering the Age of Aquarius, where this hidden knowledge, this hidden secret wisdom, ancient wisdom, is suddenly made available to the masses. And that's why the secret is called the secret, because, you know, it's been around since ancient times, but now it's made known to the public at large. And we're going to have mass mysticism. Carl Rahner said that, talking about Christianity, that the Christian of the future will be a mystic, or he or she will be nothing at all. In other words, the only religion that will exist in the future will be a mystical one, not an intellectual one, but a mystical one based on these practices that we've described. And it gets even more intriguing when you look at what Jesus himself had to say. In Luke 21, there's a very, very intriguing portion here concerning this. And when I heard about the Moses Code and what it entails, I thought of this immediately, starting with verse 7. And they asked him, saying, Master, but when shall these things be, and what sign? Notice they don't say signs, they say what sign will there be when these things shall come to pass. In other words, you know, the day of the Lord, you know, Jesus' return. Verse 8, and he said, Take heed that ye be not deceived, for many shall come in my name, saying, I am Christ, and the time draweth near. Go ye not therefore after them. Okay, in the King James, the word Christ is in italics, which means it wasn't in the original Greek manuscript. So this is significant, considering what we've just talked about, because I believe what Jesus was saying was, For many shall come in my name, saying, I am. And that word many there in the Greek is paulos, which means a sore number or a huge number. So I believe what Jesus is talking about is the modern New Age movement. And what we're seeing now is a literal fulfillment, a literal manifestation of what Jesus was saying, that millions will come in his name saying, I am. And that's what the very mantra is for the Moses Code, is I am that I am, or just plain I am. And Jesus says, and the time draweth near. Go ye not therefore after them. And that's what Deborah and I are saying. If you're listening, if you have, when this hits, April 5th, when this hits, those of you who are listening out there, if you or your loved ones or coworkers or anybody you know, starts to be impacted by this, write this down, Luke 21, verses 7 and 8.
Hold that thought for just a moment, Ray. Ray is simply talking about it passages in the Bible where Jesus is asked about his coming again, and he says, you know, there are going to be many who are going to come in my name. And of course, God, Jesus Christ as Lord would be I am. That was the name of God. And of course, so this is exactly what the Moses Code is saying. People are to begin chanting this mantra over and over. I am that I am, or I am. Now, that means I am God. That, of course, that may sound foolish to you and me, but not to these other people who are beguiled by this, because, of course, there's tremendous power when you claim that, but you don't want that power, ladies and gentlemen. And would you mind repeating where that verse is in the Scripture so our listeners
can say that? I want your listeners to I'm begging you, pleading with you, please write this down. Luke 21, verses 7 and 8, because I believe the Moses Code is going to be huge and that millions of people are going to be impacted by it, and that, you know, I want people to be equipped to deal with it. You know, I believe the Holy Spirit will back you up if you use these verses. That, you know, the Holy Spirit will break the bonds of deception that are coming upon the people that will watch this DVD and read the book. Because the lure is that, you know, we're going to have this wonderful world, this peaceful world, and all the terrorism and violence and hatred is going to disappear. And you know, that's a powerful draw. You know, people have suffered greatly, you know, over the last several decades from, personal problems, relationship problems, crime, fear. If you live in a big city, people usually have fear of crime, economic problems, and they want relief. They want action. They want something to happen, and they're going to hear that, you know, we can have a world where all their problems and frustrations and afflictions are going to disappear, you know, just by attuning to your divine self. You know, they're going to think, wow, this is what we've been waiting for. But I want them to know that Jesus warned about this. He said, go ye not therefore after them, and the time draweth near. You know, and that's our message. That's the message of Lighthouse Trails, that the time is drawing near. You know, that there's great deception going on. As Jesus said, let me read it again. Luke 21, verses 7 and 8, he said, take heed that ye be not deceived. You know, that's really our message. Take heed that ye be not deceived. There's, right before Jesus returns, there's going to be this period of great deception.
And what
great
many
deception.
Will come, isn't that, what is the phrase? Many will come in my name?
Mm-hmm. Yes, many shall come in my name, saying, and in the, and let me say this again, in the, he also says it in Matthew 24, but here Christ is in italics. And I believe the Holy Spirit did it this way because not only did they say, I am Christ, they also say, I am. So, in other words, everything was covered. Everything was covered. The Holy Spirit worked it out that in the Bible, people in our generation would be able to see exactly in detail how this would work out.
I mean, if you'd told people in the, you know, in past generations that they were God, they would have looked at you, thought you were crazy. In fact,
yes,
people who were in the occult in past generations were usually burned at the stake. This is why they burned the witches in Salem, because they were witches. They were contact with the other dimension. We're told in Deuteronomy, just to avoid, you know, these people who are into mediums and into the supernatural, fortune tellers, yeah, diviners. I mean, stay away from that. Why?
Because, well, Dr. Stan, I've said this on previous shows, what we're talking about here is not normal people contacting mediums and diviners. We're talking about normal people becoming mediums and diviners.
You're absolutely right. And that's the thing. You were tapping into the supernatural yourself, and you begin to believe that you have this supernatural power. In fact, by believing it, you may actually, of course, have and gain that supernatural power. And people don't realize really what is at stake, because they no longer believe in hell. They no longer believe in eternal damnation. They no longer believe in a God of judgment. And yet, of course, that's the message of the Bible. That's, of course, why we need a Savior. Go ahead, Deborah. You want to say something?
Yeah, well, let me read this one section of the short section of the Moses Code, and then I want to say something about Alice Bailey in the church today. I'll read this now. He's talking about, you know, how you need to say the I am, and he's referring at this point, saying that I am that or I am this, if you're talking about something you're trying to obtain, but in this sense he's talking about love or compassion or something like that. When you say I am that to God, God doesn't answer you saying you are. The Creator replies, I am. In other words, God is saying through you, if you claim it, then I claim it too, for we are one.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Go ahead, Deborah.
Okay, so, and then we'll go on, and then God is saying through you, if you claim it, then I claim it too, for we are one. I am that I am now becomes a single statement rather than two. It is God speaking to God. Let me repeat that sentence. It is God speaking to God.
In other words,
both capital. That's
we
right.
We are God.
We are God, and God is speaking to God,
right.
And God answering God. And what would God give itself? Everything. This is the kind of thing that is in the Moses Code. And, you know, Alice Bailey, we were talking about her a little bit ago. One of the things that she believed that this, when she, all these works and were being channeled to her through this spirit guide, he told her that the, Ray, you might be able to help me out a little bit, but that this age of enlightenment, when everybody suddenly, or the majority of people realized that they were God, it was going to actually come through what she considered Christianity.
And yeah, revitalized Christianity.
Revitalized, and wasn't it rejuvenated church?
Yeah, rejuvenated Christianity.
Rejuvenated church. And what is very alarming when we know that, and it really motivates a lot of what we do here at Lighthouse Trails, is when we see so much of this same type of thing now being promoted from Christian leaders and organizations through contemplative prayer and spiritual formation and, of course, the emerging church. And it's not something to be taken lightly. You've got people like Gary Thomas, who Rick Warren promotes, and Gary Thomas says, take a word or a phrase and repeat it over and over for 20 minutes. You've got Jan Johnson, who also says the same type of thing, and we could give example after example. Brennan Manning,
Gary Thomas is closely connected. Sorry to cut you off, but
okay.
Gary Thomas is very closely connected to James Dobson.
That's right.
One of the most influential Christians in the country.
Well,
and so what's happening is through the contemplative prayer movement, which really was brought into evangelicalism through Thomas Merton, Thomas Keating, Catholic monks that began practicing it, and were very, very prone to, more than prone, they resonated with Eastern religion type mystical practices. And that's what we've got here. And now you've got, you know, most of the major Christian colleges that are carrying these books and teaching the students these practices, or at the very least introducing the students to the teachers that teach this.
Hold that thought right there. We'll be back in just a moment with Deborah and Ray. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, Deborah Dombrowski of Lighthouse Trails, and Ray Youngen, who's an author that published Lighthouse Trails. And before we go on, Deborah, do you want to get your website out? Do you want to get your any telephone number or anything else out so
sure.
People would know how to get in touch with your ministry?
We have two websites. We have the publishing website where you can get all the books that we have, and that's lighthousetrails.com. And then the research site came afterwards, and we have hundreds and hundreds of pages of free information, all alphabetically indexed, and that's lighthousetrailsresearch.com. And our toll-free number for if you want to get any books is 866-876-3910.
Well, now, of course, I get email alerts from you all the time. Are those open to the general public?
They are. If you go on that main website, lighthousetrailsresearch.com, you'll see a link there that says sign up for the free e-newsletter. And once a week, we send out a newsletter with all of the stories, news stories of that week. So there's a lot of information there for people.
And it's an excellent website, and it's, of course, excellent information. And I don't have time to do the research on all of this, but I can depend upon Deborah and her staff and Ray so that he keeps us abreast of what's going on. Ray, do you have a website?
It's Lighthouse Trails.
We represent Ray.
All right, fine. So, all right, fine. Of course, what people have to understand is this whole idea. I mean, if you ever studied hypnotism, and I've studied a little bit, it's repetition. You can use a pendulum, and people fix their attention on the pendulum. Or you can use a phrase and repeat it over and over and over again. Or have them simply stare into a light. But the whole idea is to alter your state of consciousness so you then open up your mind, and first then people can begin to invade it and can plant ideas there. But also, of course, when you put yourself into this hypnotic state, you open your mind to demonic possession. Now, a lot of people don't believe in demonic possession. They think it sounds absurd, but it's not absurd at all. There are many, many people with mental illnesses who are actually demonically possessed. There are many, many people who are out there in our society today who've tapped into the supernatural, and, of course, they have come under the domination. Those of you who have never read the book written by Malachi Martin, Hostage to the Devil, you really need to read it, because it's actually 5 recorded cases of people who have been demonically possessed. And, of course, it's well documented. These came from the files of the Vatican Church. They were all carefully documented from the very inception. Fascinating material. But it introduces you to the idea that there really are these other forces out there. There is the dimension we live in. There's the other dimension. And what you are doing is opening yourself up from the beings from the other dimension. Would you agree with that, Ray or Deborah?
Oh, yes. Like I said, the verse in Timothy, Paul says that, Second Timothy 4:1?
Mm-hmm. I think it's Second Timothy, yeah.
Yeah, Second Timothy 4:1. I think it is. And the key word there is seducing. And the word seducing in the Greek means imposter. You know, an imposter. In other words, you think you're getting God, but actually you're getting, you know, a demonic spirit.
Right.
You know, that's why Jesus said, you know, it's all tied in the scriptures here. That's why Jesus said, take heed that ye be not deceived, because he knew that, you know, it was the Holy Spirit that inspired Paul to say that, you know, use the term seducing spirits. Where, you know, the Moses Code, the secret, New Earth, you know, all these books that have been so popular, you know, it's basically a seduction. I mean, an actual seduction.
And,
people think that they're going to get something, when in reality they're going to get something totally opposite.
In fact, I think Oprah Winfrey now has an internet teaching session. I think she's got 500,000 people signed up on this.
700,000.
700,000 people all over the world. And, of course, Oprah Winfrey is deeply involved in this. She beats you the secret and on her program. Not once, but several times, told people this was really the secret that she had used. She had found this, and now she has this internet program for 700,000 people. We're getting the regular instruction in this new way of looking at the world.
Right, and she has the course. Well, there's a couple things going on there. Marianne Williamson on the Oprah Show is doing a course every single day for 365 days on A Course in Miracles.
Or the radio show, I believe.
On the radio show, excuse me.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
And then also the Eckhart Tolle emphasis that she's doing right now, too. So, and it's interesting because everything in the Moses Code really is in line with Eckhart Tolle and many of these other new, and A Course in Miracles. In fact, these people are all mentioned in this book. So here we have the secret that's been at the top of the bestseller of the New York bestseller list for over a year, Eat, Pray, Love, which was made very well known through Oprah. That's another mystical meditation promoting book. That's been at the top of the list. You've got Eckhart Tolle. You've got the Moses Code. So there's
and now there's the third Jesus.
And now there's the third Jesus by Deepak Chopra. So you've got this major, I mean, it's always been there, you know, the New Age has been there for a long time, but there's this major emphasis right now, and with the communication that we have through television and the Internet, it can spread very, very quickly, and it is.
Yeah, it's like the floodgates have been opened.
Amen to that. Of course, if you read the writings of Manly P. Hall, who was a Satanist, one of his books, his greatest book of all time, is The Secret Teachings of All Ages. And in that he tells you that these forces have been here down to the ages. And they've always left their symbols, you know, there for people who were discerning to see, so that people would understand their influence. But they always hide them in plain sight. And when you turn on your television screen into CBS, very often you look in the right lower quadrant there, right lower corner of the screen, you'll see this symbol of the eye. And, of course, it's these, actually this the circle over the with a dot in the center of it. But of course, that is an ancient occult emblem. Of course, CBS, actually, it was a product of the CIA, and the people who were deeply involved in the occult. And it is no just coincidence that Oprah Winfrey is using her television platform to be pushing this occult message. And so many countless millions of unsuspecting people are falling prey to it.
Right. Something that Ray points out in his books is that those that do practice meditation, in time, they begin to absorb this belief that God is in all things, and that the idea that there might just be one way to God through Jesus Christ is not accurate. Let me read you something written by Henry Nouwen. Henry Nouwen, his books are used in many, many Christian colleges, also in many organizations. They don't see a problem there, but Henry Nouwen, he believed that you had to take it from, he said there had to be a change, a shift from the moral to the mystical, and because he was a believer in mysticism. So this is what he said. This is what it did for him by the end of his life. This was in his last book, Sabbatical Journey, and he said this: "Today I personally believe that while Jesus came to open the door to God's house, all human beings can walk through that door whether they know about Jesus or not. Today, I see it as my call to help every person claim his or her own way to God." And Thomas Merton also, Ray, you could help out here, but Thomas Merton said that if we knew what was in each one of us, like all of humanity, we would bow down and worship one another, because Thomas Merton had tapped into the Buddhist mystical state, and he came to believe that God was in all things. Now, and we could, like I say, we could give you example after example of Christian, people that say they're Christians and that say these types of things after they have been meditating for some time.
Thomas Merton was very much drawn to Sufism, which is the Muslim mystical tradition, and he corresponded with a Sufi sheikh or a Sufi master. And the Sufi master wrote him saying that Islam does not believe in the doctrine of atonement or redemption, which is basically the Christian gospel. And Merton wrote back saying, personally, now keep in mind, you know, this is what he actually believed. He says, personally, in matters where dogmatic beliefs differ, I think that controversy is of little value because it takes us away from the spiritual realities into the realm of words and ideas, you know, i.e. doctrine or, you know, the gospel. So, in other words, doctrine is of little value because it takes us away from spiritual realities. Well, what is spiritual realities? Well, in the same letter he says, but much more important is the sharing of the experience of divine light. It is here that the area of fruitful dialogue exists between Christianity and Islam. In other words, you know, the realm of meditation, the realm of the superconscious mind, you know, where all religions can unite. And this is one of the top icons of the contemplative prayer movement.
Well, don't you think everybody's...
In other words, what the Moses Code is talking about, you know, all is one, universal spirituality, is what Thomas Merton and Henry Nouwen were promoting.
Right.
Certainly there's no question at all, of course, of what they're doing. What he's really saying is that the Muslim faith and the Christian faith cannot certainly agree on doctrine at all. But once you get into the supernatural, why, we are all one.
And we're all one.
Tapping into the supernatural, tapping into the other dimension. There is another dimension there. You can tap into it. But, ladies and gentlemen, please don't try to experiment with this, because your very eternal soul is at stake in this. And
people can get this in their own churches now. Both Deborah and I this very day received a call from a woman who had talked to someone who goes to a very conservative mainline evangelical church, and she was being taught this in her church.
Right.
You know, and so it's not a matter of having to go outside the church to some kind of a cult center or, I mean, weird religious group. You know, this woman was being taught this within a large you know, evangelical church of a very conservative denomination.
And
that's basically what Lighthouse Trails is trying to address, is that it's not a matter of people leaving the evangelical church and going after joining the Hare Krishnas or the Rosicrucians or what have you, but actually being impacted in their very own Sunday school classes,
and
you know, in small groups by this.
Well, this, of course, is the best way, of course, to destroy Christianity, is to get into the church, and I'm sure a lot of the ministers are just looking for some great new gimmick that's going to draw people into the church, without realizing, of course, they're tapping into the other dimension, and instead, of course, growing their church, they're eventually going to destroy the souls of their parishioners.
Well, yes, the draw, the one thing that we keep hearing over and over again at Lighthouse Trails is that people want intimacy with God. I mean, I believe they actually want, you know, intimacy with the God that they believe is in the Bible, but what they're getting is not the God of the Bible.
Right.
And if they would only just step back and look at this and say, hey, you know, what exactly is behind all this? I mean, why hasn't this been, if this is so important for intimacy with God, how come it hasn't, why hasn't it been taught all along, you know, over the last 300-400 years? And why only now is it starting to come to the forefront? And why is it that you don't have intimacy with God just by being a normal Christian, just by being born again? I mean, why does there have to be this secret method or this esoteric technique that is only surfacing now? I mean, people should ask themselves this question.
Well, people are always looking for the latest thing, you know, the latest fad. And really, of course, when the minister supports this sort of thing, many people say, well, if the minister supports it, he must know what he's doing. Well, I think in many respects, most of the ministers really don't understand what it's all about. But they're looking for success, as we all look for success.
Yeah.
You know, they're looking for,
ministers are shaped by you know, the currents that are moving in their denomination or, you know, moving in evangelical Christianity as a whole. And, you know, they go to seminary and their professors will introduce them to the works of Nouwen or Merton. And they'll be taught spiritual formation, and there's kind of like a paradigm shift. There's kind of like a change, kind of like a turnaround, and things that were once thought to be silly or, you know, inappropriate become actually the opposite. They become attractive and compelling. And there's like a reorientation of you know, the students' minds that, you know, well, I want intimacy with God. You know, I should do this. You know, no longer is it. Dallas Willard made this very clear. He said that people that engage in this type of prayer should let it be known throughout the church that it's okay to enter the silence. You know, it's okay. And that's what we're up against, what Deborah and I are up against. You know, we have powerful voices saying it's okay to enter the silence, and then, you know, we're saying it's not okay.
Well, I think
and I believe we have very firm, solid documentation behind us in our books, but, you know, it's a struggle. It's a real struggle. I mean, it's very lopsided. You know, the currents in evangelical Christianity are moving toward, you know, contemplative prayer. They're moving toward the silence. And by contemplative, your listeners should understand that I'm not talking about contemplative in the traditional sense of that word, where you think, you know, deeply on something. That contemplative prayer is actually, you know, not thinking. It's actually emptying your mind through repetition using Christian type mantras. And I want to make that clear, that, you know, they may think, well, what's wrong with contemplating? It's the polar opposite of traditional contemplation. So that's the term, though, contemplative prayer, where supposedly you switch off your mind and the soul contemplates God, you know, in a mystical state. You know, it's kind of misleading if you're not familiar with the term, but, you know, that's what we're up against. That you know, many, many writers and many, many leaders in Christianity are seeing contemplative prayer as the wave of the future, you know, that will put you know, the term we always hear is you'll be better able to hear God's voice.
You always
better
yourself,
able.
Probably.
In other words, you're always thinking, you're always doing something, you're always busy, and God can't get through to you. You know, He wants to talk to you, He wants to get through to you, but He can't because you're just too busy engaging in normal life. So you have to be still. You know, they use that verse in Psalms. You know, be still and know that I am God. You know, but be still doesn't mean, you know, empty your mind. It doesn't mean to go into an altered state of consciousness.
I mean, that's what it's all about, is going into an altered state of consciousness. My guests this evening, Ray Young and Deborah Dombrowski at Lighthouse Trails. You can go to their website, get information, understand Christianity is under attack today. And so many of our good people are getting swept up this good ministry without understanding where this is all leading. What's going to happen to the flock? We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, Ray and Deborah, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program. Why don't you go right ahead?
You want to go first, Deborah?
Okay. The other day I was talking to someone who was in the New Age, and he said, isn't it kind of arrogant to think that, you know, you know what truth is? He was talking to me about, you know, believing in the Bible. And I said, actually, the opposite is true, because I said, when we believe the Bible, we believe that we are sinners and that we cannot save ourselves, and that we acknowledge there is a Creator who is separate from us, who is God, and we worship Him and we adore Him, and He sent a Savior to save us, and anyone who will receive Him can be saved. I said, when the opposite end, it's really more arrogant to say that you are equal to the Creator, that you are the Creator, and that you don't need a Savior. All you need to do is have this certain kind of thinking, go into these certain kind of states, and you will be equal to God. I said, actually, that is more arrogant.
And what was his response to that, Deborah?
Oh, he didn't have much to say after that. But, you know, we talked a little bit more, and I didn't say it in a mean way. I just wanted to try to explain to him that as human beings, we have a Creator, and we are to worship Him. We can be thankful and grateful. Let me tell you one quick thing. I think it was Warren Smith that told me this, about this little story he heard about the 911 building that had been, you know, the plane had hit it, and there's a woman inside there, and she's about to be consumed with the smoke and the flames, and she knows she's going to die, and suddenly in through the door bursts a fireman, a big old fireman, and she realizes, he's going to get me out of here. She doesn't say, are you the only way out? She's like, wow, there is a way out. That is true Christianity, when we acknowledge our Creator and our Savior. And that's why we do what we do, not because we don't love New Agers or we hate them or anything like that. No, we care, and we know that the gospel can save them if they will turn to Jesus Christ.
Amen to that. Well, Ray, your parting thought before we let you go.
My parting thought, again, is I would like your listeners to grab pen and paper or remember this if they can. Luke 21:7-8. When or if the Moses Code, hits big, I want them to have these verses available to, pass this on to their family members and friends and co-workers, etc., that are starting to be drawn into the Moses Code, especially verse 8. That's Luke 21, verses 7 and 8.
Right,
the King James. I don't know what it is in other translations, but especially in the King James.
God bless. Thanks so very much. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guests this evening, Deborah Dombrowski, Ray Young, and Ray's written 2 books which we carry. One is called A Time of Departing. A Time of Departing. The other is called For Many Shall Come in My Name. And that's really what this is really all about. For many shall come in my name. And these people are then who chant, I am that I am. I am that I am. And of course, when we do that, we're claiming we are God. And you're putting yourself into an altered state of consciousness. And of course, open yourself up to the demonic forces. To understand the demonic forces, let me suggest the 4-tape or 4-CD set, The Secret Behind the Secret. That's The Secret Behind the Secret. My talk on the forbidden secret, which I gave before I'd ever even heard of the secret. In fact, you'll see here in the question and answer period at the end of the talk, somebody says, is this talking about the secret? And I'm looking sort of perplexed. I don't even know what they're talking about. Well, we're all talking about the same secret. The only trouble is they think it's great, and we want to warn people for the sake of their eternal soul to avoid this like the plague. And then, of course, we actually have the material on demonic possession, and that is, of course, the book called Hostage to the Devil. Hostage to the Devil, and it's written by Malachi Martin. We have a four-tape set of my interviews with Malachi Martin called The Wisdom of Malachi Martin. And until people understand that we live in one dimension, there is another dimension, there is an interlock between those dimensions, certainly we have our book on UFOs, which are a manifestation of the other dimension. We have a great DVD on UFOs put out by Bob Fletcher. And all of these things are available. If you'd like to know more about them, suggested a donation, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. You need to have the information. You need to have it at your fingertips. You need to understand the true nature of the spiritual battle that's going on today. And I wish we were on 1,000 radio stations. We could sound the warning, but, well, we're just grateful to have the network that we do here at Radio Liberty. If you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us, and of course this program is heard on 10 actual radio stations. It's heard on internet. It's heard on shortwave. This hour, wish we could have 2 hours, but we have actually 250,000 watt transmitters carrying this program. But believe me, it's an expensive proposition. Doing talk radio, my wife and I give our time without compensation. We've been doing this for many years. In fact, many times we've even had to subsidize what we're doing. But we certainly look forward to our listeners, if they agree with us, to give us a call at 1-800-544-8927 and to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. Let me suggest you go to our website, RadioLiberty.com. Now you can listen to our programs there live 4 hours a day. You can listen to our programs on the which are archived. You can listen to the MP3 programs. You can listen to our live feed to the satellite 9 hours a day of Radio Liberty and 9 hours of Joyce Riley, and a couple of our other friends are involved in this venture. We do hope, of course, that many of you out there will want to go to our website. You can pull down many of our DVDs there, watch them free of charge. You can read my newsletters and feel free to copy them. We have a number of articles posted. We have, of course, links to other important and significant websites that we agree with. Again, our website is RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com, and you can listen to our internet radio programs there, which are basically the programs that you hear. In fact, there's another program that says it's 7 o'clock Pacific time every morning on the American Freedom Network. You can listen to that one as well, although we don't archive that. But it is heard a number of times in the Colorado region. Well, ladies and gentlemen, please pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and our ministers, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision, and for our protection. And so until tomorrow evening at the same time, may the Lord be with you. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. And the views of our guest, and for this next hour, our guest is going to be David Sibley from Ready Reserve Foods, and we work with Ready Reserve Foods, and we try to get people to begin thinking seriously about the unthinkable. That we could actually have a situation where there would be a shortage of food and perhaps even famine in the United States. Now, that seems so far and foreign. I mean, look at all the food that's in the stores, but you have to understand that there are no supplies in those stores. The products are being brought in by big diesel rigs. Only, of course, the price of diesel oil is going up so high that a lot of the people who drive these big rigs are just actually going to have to park them before long. They're not going to be able to be doing the deliveries there. Either that, or they're going to have a significant increase in the prices. An article in the San Jose Mercury day or two ago pointing out that milk has gone up 25% in just 1 year. Bread has gone up 15% in 1 year. Eggs have gone up 24% in 1 year. Flour has gone up in price 28% in 1 year. Grapes have gone up 12%. Of course, if you have been watching the price of meat and the price of chicken and so many of these other things, they're all rising dramatically. And, of course, down the line, when you realize that wheat now has gone up to $16, $17 a barrel, a bushel, it has never been that high. The price of rice is the highest it's ever been. The price of soybeans and corn is the highest these prices have ever been, and they're rising rapidly, and the price of oil is rising rapidly, and the value of the dollar is falling, and all of these things really forebode very, very difficult times ahead. And David Sibley, thanks very much for being with us.
How are you doing tonight, Doctor?
I'm doing just fine. Well, are you having more difficulty getting many of the products that you utilize and putting into your cans for Ready Reserve long-term storage food?
Yes and no. Things that were in the past, for instance, wheat, that were just available till it came out your ears, are getting harder to get, plus the price is going up. I've seen wheat at $22 a bushel. You were talking about that earlier. It's taking longer to get foods. Our suppliers are having trouble at times, at certain products, getting certain times of the year. The point I'm trying to make is the country has changed really radically, especially on the supply side of things, in the last 10 years. Companies that I used to do business with 10 years ago, that Ready Reserve has done business with for decades, are gone. They no longer are in business. They've been gobbled up. They've been moved to China. There's just the whole dynamic of the country and what used to be and what was our food security has changed. It's gone nuts. It no longer makes any sense.
Now, your company's been around for, what, 40 years or so?
Almost, 37 years.
All right, and you actually eventually bought that. How long ago did you buy it yourself?
10 years ago.
All right, fine.
That's when I began running the company, and again, all the people we've done business with, that company had done business with all these years, it's just all changed. You don't know from day to day who's in business and who has supply.
But of course, we noticed that your prices are going up too. You sent us a notification that your prices are going to be increasing, or going to have to be increasing. Is that right?
Oh, exactly. And all the things that go into making our product, for instance, cans, cardboard. In 1999, a box that held six 1-gallon cans, was about 42 cents. Today it's about $1.08.
Hold that price. We'll be back here in just a moment with David Sibley. Well, David, you were talking about how, of course, the price of the boxes has gone up. The price of the cans has gone up as well.
What about cans have doubled since 1999.
All right, fine. And so, of course, all of these prices are going to have to be passed down on to the customers. But the biggest thing is, are you able to get things like dried milk today or dried eggs or powdered eggs or things like that? Are they readily available or not?
Yes, but at times it becomes spotty. In other words, years ago, powdered milk was available with a phone call, and you could have a truckload within a couple days. Now it takes sometimes a week to a week and a half, and there's some up in Visalia, or part of it's got to come out of Jerome, Idaho. So the inventories, these copious inventories that used to exist, are not anymore. Everything is just-in-time supply and production. And then I run into a problem is, for instance, when I order food and things like milk, they tend to be a larger quantity than most people. Don't need a half a truckload of powdered milk, or buy several tons of powdered milk at one time. Yes, it's getting harder in some areas. And things like milk and powdered eggs, dried eggs, all those things require a lot of heat to dry and to process. And heat is energy, and energy, is we all know, is money now. So it's really getting surreal at times. When I say surreal, what used to be just absolute solid business, everything was available at any time, you don't know from one moment to the next what you're going to get when you place orders with suppliers. It's a little unnerving. And there's another problem that's happening. Business is on the upswing. People are getting worried for good reason. Now the orders are starting to get bigger and bigger. And when I place orders with suppliers, and it's starting to take more and more time to find what you need, and I'm really worried, Doctor, that I honestly believe, now I don't say this for shock value, the way things are going, and I make, and this is a lot of intuition, the way things are going, that we could be experiencing a collapse of our food supply system here in the United States by mid to late summer. And I almost think we could have, again, this is my opinion, we could be under martial law by August or September.
Well, of course, if we had food shortages, why, it would anticipate that the government would be begin moving to ration food. And we're going to be back here in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is David Sibley, who is the, I don't know why, he's the owner of Ready Reserve Foods. Provides the food packaging that is offered through Radio Liberty. And David's saying that he's really very, very concerned the way things are going. And there really as many times it's difficult to get things that you can usually get them, but sometimes there are long delays in things like powdered eggs or powdered milk. And sometimes the orders don't go out as quickly as they should simply because they are unable to fill them for a time, although eventually they can get them. What people really don't understand is what's happening to the food crops throughout the world. Reading today, there are real food shortages over in the Philippines. There are real food shortages in Japan. And Japan, of course, is vying to get rice supplies. Rice is a large part of the staple. The difficulty is there's been real problems with the rice crops. There's places in India. There's one area where several million people live where a massive number of rats came in. And of course, apparently they eat the bamboo, and then they go in and they gobble up the rice crop, and the people in this one area of India are having to eat roots. I mean, there's no rice for them. The price of rice is higher than it's ever been before. There's shortage of rice developing. There are shortages of wheat developing too, because it's a new form of rust that certainly has spread from Africa up into Europe and moving across the world, that simply wipes out the wheat crops. And the wheat crop was very, very poor in Australia this year because of the drought. And certainly you must be right on top of what's going on. What's your impression? My understanding is we have hardly any long-term supplies. We used to have a 3-year supply of wheat here in the United States, of grain, dictated by Congress, and Somebody in the administration has dumped all that wheat on the world market or given it all away. So we really only have, what, 40 or 50 days of food supplies here in the United States, and that's it. Have you heard that?
We have about 41 days, and that's getting shorter by the minute. A minute ago, you were talking about wheat failures and stuff. In 2007, there was the first known Category 5 hurricane in the Arabian Sea. And it came up from Africa, this monster of a storm, and it did damage up into the Persian area, up into in the Middle East. But what it had done is when it passed over Africa, it picked up a fungus, and then it spread it up into Iran, a wheat fungus, called UE99. It's now up into parts of India and spreading crazy. Scientists are meeting and having emergency meetings on how to handle this. And it can be handled. There are wheat strains that are resistant to this fungus. But the problem is it's going to take 5 years to get this implemented. Now, there is not 5 years. This is spread up into what they call the breadbasket of Asia. They're major, major wheat-growing areas. So they could be having, just on top of what you described, in between the droughts and everything, crop failures or wheat failures that they can't and not be able to consume the wheat that they're growing simply because the fungus has attacked it. And every day, the Earth's population increases by 250,000 people net. That it grows by 250,000. That's after the deaths and the attrition. And they all require food, energy, and water. And that is one side of the coin. Now, countries like China, with 1.3 billion people, their diet is changing. They're increasing more, they're consuming more food. They're more affluent. And they're buying up the world's any excess, or actually creating a shortage in some areas of food products to offset their diet, their enhanced diet. Like I said, the dynamic of the food industry here in the United States and around the world, and consumption patterns have changed when you throw in droughts like Australia. You mentioned earlier, Australia was production was almost non-existent on the world market, and other countries like India and even China depended upon wheat imports from Australia, and they just literally could not supply. Now what's happening, now here's where it begins to get a little geopolitical. We have abused our position with the reserve currency. Everything's traded in dollars. We've just printed dollars out of thin air to maintain this lifestyle. And our trading partners have accepted it. There's $4 trillion in cash, trillion with a T, outside of the country. $2 trillion of it are approximately in China and Japan. The other two are in the Middle East and other parts of the world. Now, that money is coming in here. We're competing against, it's coming home. It's repatriating. And we are beginning to compete against our own money for our own substance. China's coming in here, buying up crops. So is Japan. And they have the cash. So we're literally importing inflation. And that's what those numbers you were talking about earlier, that's one of the factors involved. Plus, we're converting a lot of our crop, approximately 20% of the corn crop or the arable land, to ethanol, which is we're competing against our own vehicles. And here is the real crux of it. This $4 trillion that's out of the country is diminishing in value every day. Now, should it get, shall we say, scared and want to become tangible? In other words, all these Chinese holding, say, $1 trillion, decide that the get scared and decide, I've got to convert this into something other than paper. And they will come flooding in here with this money and ratcheting the price of everything we do up to the point where our economy could collapse because of it. We'll literally import in our own dollars and import inflation. We're competing against our excesses of in the past, and it's coming. And the chickens are coming home to roost, literally. So, given all those problems, for instance, the price of oil keeps going up. One of the reasons oil is going up is the value of it takes more and more dollars to buy it because our dollars are becoming more and more valueless.
And I think people have to understand the value of the dollar has gone from about 2.5 years ago, something like that, from about 130 against the basket of other currencies, down to about 72, I think it was, got down to 71. I think it was up just a little today. But I mean, the dollar has lost about 40% of its value in relationship to the other currencies. This basket of currencies throughout the world, now all the currencies of the world are losing value because they're all fiat money, are simply, we've been exporting our inflation for years. We've got other countries to take our worthless dollars, but those dollars are going to begin coming home here very soon, and they're in the process of being repatriated now. Other countries are not buying our treasury bonds as they have in the past, and so the other private citizens throughout the world are not buying our treasury bonds. Why? Because the value of the dollar is falling so rapidly. Why would you want to invest, you know, in American treasury bonds, you know, at may pay up to 4% interest, when the dollar is losing 10% in value a year? You're going behind every single year. So increasingly, why other countries are trying to unload their dollars. And when those dollars all come back into this country, we only have about $700 million in circulation, $700 billion in circulation in the United States today. And when that $3 or $4 trillion comes back in here, hang on to your hat, because you're going to see inflation that may begin to rival that they have in Zimbabwe, a country that we brought a Marxist dictatorship to power there. We brought Robert Mugabe in. Robert Mugabe now has an inflation rate in his country of 100,000% a year. 100,000% a year. And remember, that is the government that your State Department installed. If we do that to the people of Rhodesia, why wouldn't they do that here in America? And everything the Federal Reserve is doing today is simply pouring out more money and more credit, and of course creating more inflation and complicating the problem. It's not going to solve it. But eventually, of course, you're going to have to go out and be able to buy food. You cannot buy food in Rhodesia today. The shelves are empty, and if you can't grow your food, why, you may be down to eating one meal a day, and you may be having nothing more than perhaps washed pumpkin leaves or something like that, side brewed up to make some sort of a soup. The people are on the verge of starvation all over Rhodesia, thanks to the government that the United States State Department installed. And Henry Kissinger promised the people of Rhodesia, if things ever got bad, that America would come to their rescue. Do you really think America's going to come to their rescue when they have 100,000% inflation a year today? Well, David, certainly we don't see that here. People say it could never happen here, but I would say if God is just, why couldn't it happen here? We've done it to other countries. Is God going to allow us to live comfortably while we inflict this sort of horror on other countries throughout the world? And, of course, what would happen if there really were food shortages here? What do you contemplate happening as far as food shortages, David?
Well, as this becomes more and more evident to people that things could get very... Generations don't even understand that there could be shortages, because we've always had plenty. But as more and more people become aware that something bad, or actually just, shall we say, get the wake-up call, they will begin to put in food stores, which will exacerbate the problem, all right? There's not going to be enough to potentially go around, especially if we have a short crop this year, in the not-too-distant future. And there will be, for the lack of a better word, people attempting to hoard or do what I would consider prudent, put away, you know, fill pantries and buy foods for hard times. And that may end up being the straw that breaks the camel's back and drives us over the edge to where there isn't enough to go around.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, that certainly seems like a very, very viable thing. So what about the bees? Let's talk a little bit about the bees. And is this really a problem? We keep hearing about it being a problem, but is it really a problem as far as fruits and vegetables? Are you able to get fruits and vegetables this year? And what about next year if the bee shortage is real? What have you learned about the bees?
There has been nothing come to the forefront that I have that has jumped out at me about the bees. Now, we have to look at that several ways. One is, are they getting... I don't think they're getting to the bottom of it, because if they... The colony collapse syndrome, where the bees are dying off by thousands and thousands of hives. If they knew what it was, I'm sure, and could fix it, I'm sure they'd be out trumpeting a horn saying that we know what it is, that's no longer a problem. But those little critters pollinate about a third of our crops, and about one third of what you eat has been pollinated by a bee. I still think they're stymied. Nothing. Again, I look, I study, but nothing's come out. They're still all scratching their heads. What's coming out now is that the collapse may be a combination of stress-induced and chemical-induced problems that are causing this wholesale die-off of the bees. That's all I can glean off of things. But nobody's come up with anything concrete yet. There are several schools of thought as to what's causing it. But nonetheless, they are dying, and there is a shortage of bees. And let's see if they can get the job done this spring when it comes time to get everything pollinated. That's all I know at this point about the problem, or at least of what is new in the information that is available out there.
Well, actually, 60 Minutes had a very interesting program about 2 or 3 weeks ago where they actually talked about the bees. Apparently, it's not necessarily the bees are dying. They simply are... they get confused. They can't find their way back to the hive, and I suppose if they do dive, at least the... die, at least the hives are empty. And of course you have to have this familiar relationship there for a hive to be effective and to pollinate different reasons. Of course they want to tell us, what is the transportation of the bees? Oh, they're transporting the hive from one area to another, but they've been doing this for decades. Oh my goodness, you know, the bees are under so much emotional stress. That's the problem, it's the emotional stress. Well, this is a fascinating article where they interviewed a beekeeper, and he said that there's a new insecticide out, put out by Bayer. And what it does, it, as far as the insects are concerned, how it works, it confuses the insects, and so they suddenly lose their sense of direction, and that's how the insects, of course, can't mate, they can't do anything, and because this new pesticide has had a profound impact on the on the insects, why, of course, they don't bother the crops. But as he said, that's exactly what's happening to our bees. They've lost their sense of direction. They've lost their sense of get confused, and they don't go back to the beehive. And it was his contention that it was this product. Of course, the government said, oh, no, it's not this pesticide at all. And yet, of course, it will confuse the insects that feast on our crops. Why couldn't it be confusing the bees so that they can't get back? And certainly, but people say, well, you know, if this were true, why would the government to do something? And yet I'd like to suggest there are people in government who have a different agenda. They believe in population control, and is there a better way to... Well, this is Dr. Stan back here, and we were just talking about the bees. And certainly, there probably is no shortage at all this year, but what's going to happen for next year? What's going to happen now, of course, as the time comes for the flower, when the trees begin to blossom and the vegetables and fruits begin to blossom, and you need bees to fertilize, and about a third of our crops are dependent upon bees. But of course, many of the hives have disappeared. There's a great deal of evidence to suggest that it's one of the pesticides there. The article, pardon me, recent program on 60 Minutes talked about this pesticide that has been made by Bayer that confuses insects. Well, if it confused an insect, why couldn't it confuse a bee? But of course, people say, well, the government certainly would would not, you know, withhold information. I would like to suggest, of course they would hold information, because there are people in government who have a different worldview, who believe in population control, who believe that too many people in the world, and I personally believe famine is a very, very good means of culling the world population. And if you doubt that there are people who really believe this way, you should get our material on sustainable development, our syllabus, where we actually quote from the Global Biodiversity Assessment Report, which was put out by the elite, the people who really rule the world, when they talk about the necessity of cutting the world population down to 1 or 2 billion people, unless, of course, we're going to lower everybody's living standards. And then, of course, you only need to read the writings. You know, many of our world leaders, like Jacques Cousteau, who talked about the necessity of eliminating 350,000 people a day to get the world back in balance. And if you doubt that, you can give us a call. We'll send you his article, where he's quoted in UNESCO Courier in November of 1991, making that statement. There really are people, read the writings of Bertrand Russell. They really believe that famine and war are wonderful ways to get population control. But of course, as Bertrand Russell said, the best thing would be a great plague to sweep the earth. Well, anyway, David, certainly you must be talking to other people in the food industries. Are other people worried about what's going on?
Yes, there's a lot of people that are, the people that are actually the most worried appear to be in the commodities. When I say the wheat, the corn, those industries, there's always been, in my lifetime, and mostly in yours, there's always been an excess of those products. They're just silos full. Well, those situations don't exist. They're having to get supplies from many, many different sources. Instead of access to a grain elevator and having all they want, there isn't what they need in any one spot anymore. And it's creating a lot of confusion and a lot of logistics problems. Now, maybe it's a passing thing and we're going to get through it. But if it continues too much longer, then when I say too much longer, I would think in the late summer, if when the crops begin to come in, if we don't have a very, very
bumper crop, a
large output this year, it should begin to manifest itself by next fall. Now, here comes, say, let's assume the situation in Australia with the drought continues, and it looks, there's no evidence that it's abating. All right, China's had a rust problem and droughts with her grain production. But they have a lot of our money. They come in here and will buy our crop at any price because they need it. And that is what I think is going to be the geopolitical problem, is when they ratchet the price of, just say, let's pick on wheat alone, up to where the average American can't afford it any longer. That's when I think we will begin to get the martial law. But they have the money. We don't. They're liquid. We're the debtors. They are not. And when our government finally hears enough screaming from the American population about what's going on, when they wake up and decide to stop selling wheat to the Chinese, for instance, I'm going to pick on the Chinese because it's easily understood. It's multifaceted here. Okay? Then the Chinese are sitting on all these dollars that have, now they can't spend. They're hampered. And that's when the problems, you talked about inflation like you can't believe. Just prior to that happening, or actually what that will be the impetus that'll cause it, is when your food bill doubles, triples, quadruples, and it's all you can do to keep a roof over your head and keep yourself fed, then we have major, major problems.
Well, of course, then with the price of fuel, heating oil going up, people are going to have to decide whether they want to be warm or whether they want to eat. You can't do both. And of course, if you have to get a drive to work, price of gasoline gets up to $6, $8, $10 a gallon. Going to have a real impact on the way we live. People don't understand that we're on the edge of dramatic, dramatic changes, and it's all planned. Nothing is happening by accident. They know exactly what they're doing. They just don't want the American people to know. We'll be right back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Sydney. We started out the program talking about the fact that we used to have at least a 3-year supply of wheat on hand. In fact, this was the law that Congress had said. We don't want to ever have to face a wheat shortage here in America. We want plenty of wheat on hand. Without the knowledge or consent of Congress, they systematically emptied our silos. We used to have bountiful silos with enough food to feed the entire American population. David says we're down to about a wheat supply of about 41 days. Rice is certainly the staple of many places in the world. It has reached the highest price in history. What about rice? Are you having any difficulty getting rice, David?
Not at the moment. Rice is still available. No one has said anything about rice. The demand for rice is climbing, but it hasn't jumped up like, say, for instance, corn. It is, in just in the last 2 years, has become so valuable also as a component in the base stock for ethanol that we burn in our cars. So that is a big problem in itself. But something we didn't discuss the last go-around is you talked about the drive to work and the fuel going up. Remember that two-thirds of our economy are wants, things you don't have to have, all right? Only one-third are things you have to have, food, shelter, clothing. Now, as less and less money and energy and resources, a la water, are available, remaining resources have to be placed on that one-third, the things you have to have. Potentially, this is one of the major threats to our economy. We could start losing entire industries that are not necessary because the resources aren't there to run them. So, and all of this is racing to a point in time. It's actually started in some areas. It's subtle. You can't... you have to watch it, but people are making adjustments. They're becoming more frugal. They're not doing this. They're not doing that. Well, every time you cut back, somebody else has to cut back because we're all dependent upon this system, of us all spending money. Now we potentially could lose two-thirds of our economy if things got really, really rough.
No, which two-thirds are you speaking of, David?
Oh, for instance, let's make a little quip here. Now,
hold your thought right now. Okay. We want to bring other stations back on board with us. Be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is David Sipley, and he's the manager or president or... Anyway, he's the fellow who owns Ready Reserve Foods, and we work with them, and of course, many of our listeners have played in their products. And this company's been around for 40 years, and of course, they prepare the food, put it into cans, and the last 10, 15 years, we take care of it properly. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464 if you... 8295. That's 464-8295 if you have a question. But David certainly is on the front lines of this. Since he's having difficulty getting many of the products, he can get them. They many times are delayed. But of course, he's keeping an eye on what's happening to wheat. He's talking about sometimes he's seen wheat go up to $22 a bushel. Now, you have to understand, wheat has always been the cheapest thing. The price has been $3 a bushel here in the United States, $3.50 a bushel for years. And now up to, on the commodity exchanges, sometimes $16, $17 a bushel, but sometimes getting up into the $22 a bushel. For wheat, of course, as the wheat goes up, then so does the price of bread. Bread's certainly up considerably, but I think it's going to go a lot higher before this is all over. So you pick up the story there, David.
Okay, I was mentioning that as people become, shall we say, more and more poor, that trip to Disneyland the family was going to make this year is no longer an option. We have to take what remaining money we have coming. I'm making this up. Okay, we're not going to go to Disneyland. We're going to stay home and have a roof over our head and be fed. Well, eventually it's going to be going to affect places like I pick on Disneyland because everybody knows what Disneyland is. Eventually their gate, their cash flow, their business will begin to suffer. The people will not have the money to entertain themselves on things like that. And these adjustments are somewhat subtle at the moment. They're going to be, if we continue, and there does not appear to be a reason why it'll change, this is going to accelerate to the point where life is going to come down for the majority of Americans to being warm, fed, safe, and dry. A la the Depression. And the dynamics of this country and this world are a lot different than they were back in 1929 when the Depression hit. Back in those days, we had a very strong and moral homogeneous society that we were all pretty much wired about the same. We had some pretty good leaders. We had plenty of resources and we had an industrial capacity that was just idled. We have none of that stuff now to fall back on. We have nothing.
I think people have to understand that they have intentionally and purposely exported our manufacturing base. We have lost 5 million manufacturing jobs, 3 million since George Bush came into power. And, of course, along with that, of course, we've added almost $3 trillion to our national debt here over the last six or seven years during the Bush administration. We are the largest debtor nation in the world. We have to borrow over $2.5 billion every year just to pay our every day, $2.5 billion a day to pay our debts. And what happens, of course, if we do begin going into a recession? They can't actually flood the country with money. They were doing that now, and it's not making any difference, all except that it's producing inflation. They can't, of course, cut taxes anymore to try to stimulate the economy. I mean, they can't keep going further and further into
debt all the time. And that one thing, you talked about flooding the country with money. When those $4 trillion outside the country realize that we're making those dollars they have in their hands useless by printing more, they will try to make that tangible. They will try to get out of the dollars. Everybody will try to get out of dollars and into something. Whatever it is, I do not know, but they will run the price of everything up in this country and around the world in dollars to where nobody will take the dollar. And we will be left literally at a total standstill.
Well, I think it's very, very grim outlook, and I think the thing is people need to begin making preparations today for the difficult times that lie ahead, and to stop buying things, you don't need, stop buying luxuries, start saving, you know, and certainly you don't want to just put your money into the bank, because it's losing with inflation at the present rate between 10% and 12% every year. The money that you put in your bank, and they're only paying you probably 2% or 3% interest, so you probably want to invest in something that has intrinsic value. But start preparing for the difficult times that I believe are coming. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. I would point out that the United Nations is talking about their deep concern about a coming worldwide famine right now. Of course, that they providing a certain amount of money to areas where there is famine in the world, but they're looking at the point in the very near future where they're not going to be able to afford to actually provide the food. There would not be enough money to provide to all the people throughout the world to prevent famines, and they're contemplating, if you're reading what the United Nations is talking about, the very real recurrence of worldwide famine and the necessity of even beginning to ration food, not only in third world countries, but in first world countries as well. Had you heard anything at all about that, David?
No, sir. I have not heard. Oh, well, I guess I have. There are bits, articles in general coming about how the cost of food is starting to really hamper relief efforts. Their funds are only so much, and it's buying so much less now that their ability to help is being hamstrung. So, and that only breeds more problem. They're going to need more and more of less and less, or they have less and less to try to do more and more with, I should say. It's just a mess. And again, my gut feeling, what I extrapolate from what I read, articles I read, things that come across my desk, I have people send me stuff about food, it should really become obvious to everyone that there's a problem by late summer. Late summer, and it might get here even sooner if we have a real bad spring and or summer. In other words, we have, say, floods in late spring that will either destroy the crops, or floods in early spring that slow the farmers into getting into the fields. In other words, we get off on a bad footing this year. To be real honest with you, the way I read it, what I can glean, if we don't have a very, very good all-around general harvest, just not in wheat, but in all commodities this year, things could get real different by fall and winter of next year.
Well, that's something I've been wondering. Of course, rice, you know, white rice won't keep indefinitely. Do you actually cook that when you actually put this in the cans? Is this sort of like a pre-cooked rice that you have available for people?
How does that work? Hard-boiled rice, yes. It's partially cooked, and it's very, very clean, and then it cooks up, and it's excellent rice. It rather than just straight white rice. It's a white rice that has been pre-cooked.
Oh, it's sort of like the minute rice then that we would buy in the stores, things like that.
Right, to some extent, yes. It's a better quality rice. Let's put it that way.
It will last then for a good long while.
Yes, it does last almost indefinitely. Grains tend to do that anyway. Wheat that we can, the red hard red wheat, would not exposed and kept canned up, it will last 30, 40 years. They've found grains down in stable conditions down in the bottom of the pyramids in baskets in this nice, cool, dry atmosphere. It was 2,000 and 3,000 years old, and it was still good, and it still germinated.
So wheat is certainly a staple. That's why they call it the staff of life, and rice. And we don't even think about these things. We take everything for granted because we have so much in our stores today, but people don't understand that if you go to the back of the store, there are no stocks at all. They're bringing things in almost on a daily basis. But, of course, the rising price of a cost of diesel is going to have a profound impact on that. Of course, you're in that business as well. You actually deliver your food products. And what is the price of diesel now, and how is that impacting
you? I've seen it as high as $4.239. And there's a dynamic there that is potentially that no one has occurred to anyone, I guess, in government. All right, the owner-operators, the independent truck driver, is the one that is basically, they move the majority of freight in this country, and they do the different things. But one of the things a lot of them will do at certain times of the year will haul the harvest around the country, like from our Central Valley to the watermelons up into Idaho and stuff that are grown here, and they've got to be out in the field, loaded up, and they've got to get gone because it's a perishable. Well, we're coming off this massive economy. We've had all these trucks now that are idled. Too many trucks chasing too little freight, driving the rates down. And truck drivers are going broke left and right. They're just walking away from their trucks. So what's going to happen come this harvest season, if this doesn't change itself, when I don't see it happening, is when the farmers and the producers of our food need an increased amount of trucks to move the harvest around the country, they're not going to be available. So no one in government that I know of is even anticipating this problem. So their trucking, this form of trucking, is not linear. It's not steady all year round. There's certain seasons where you need a whole bunch more trucks doing certain things, and other parts of the year they're not needed. So we could have a good harvest in certain areas, but it may not be able to get moved and transported around the country. It's just something that I see building, and it's and the leaders that we have now are just, I think they're paralyzed. They're overwhelmed with the problems. And
you know, one of the things that really bothers me is, first, our farmers are dependent upon diesel for their tractors, and the price of diesel, as it goes up and up, is going to have a profound impact on the farmers as well, isn't it?
Oh, it's the cost of producing a crop is going through the roof. But they are, when they sell the crop, it appears they're recouping that, but because the prices keep going up. But that is the first step, okay, the diesel fuel and the oil that is involved in making the pesticides and the natural gas, all that stuff is going up. But then you have the transportation. It's got to get out of the fields into silos or to processing plants and canning plants. It has to be processed. All the energy that's available are the costs in that process. It ultimately, the consumer pays. And when a can of something today is $2, and then by late summer it could be $4, and your habits will be changing. This is why I say all of it, this is like a perfect storm. All this foreign money, all this money in foreign hands, is going to, when it begins to see it happen, comes flooding in here, running up the price of everything. At the same time, all we need now, too, is say some sort of, we're importing so much oil. We're one little glitch in that, and not only could things get very, very expensive, but almost next to impossible to get. And then with our present horde of leaders, they will come up with some of the most draconian measures. Look what they're doing with this credit money liquidity crisis right now. They're doing the funniest things.
I mean, they're really, of course, they're only complicating the problem. Temporarily, it may look good, but down the line, it's going to be disastrous. Well, let's go to Jeannie, who's calling from Aptos. Hi, Jeannie. Do you have a question or comment?
I certainly do. This has been bothering me for 10 years. And as a researcher, I came across an article. I cannot find it. I was believed it was from the Wall Street Journal. It was written by a professor. And I think it was just being put out as a test to see how the people would react. And it was regarding rationing food, and you would get a card. Either you could go and shop at your favorite store, you would have to specify a store, or there were some other options. And I'm wondering if this guy knows about that, and I would like to put that out in the audience. To anyone that's listening, to call Radio Liberty or email you, Dr. Stan, because I'd love to get a hold of that article. I went through all my research books, and I cannot find it.
Well, I do know that the Pentagon, I've read some articles, are running computer programs on about how people will react in food and energy shortage. They're running all these different scenarios. So it is on their mind. And when I said the Pentagon, well, why are they doing that? Because it's back to this martial law thing that I was talking about earlier. We're right on the ragged edge. We're slowly and imperceptibly, well, not so imperceptibly, wading into this problem. But there's a ledge we're going to be stepping off here about midsummer.
Right. And it was, too, as I remember now, you had a choice, or you could name a restaurant to go to eat, or you could name a store where you could buy your food at, and it would be rationed. The card that you would have would give you a certain allotment of food, and that's what I remember about the article.
You know, Jeannie, I'm old enough to remember the Second World War, and of course we had ration cards at that time. You were rationing your sugar, you were rationing the number of canned goods you could get. You were limited in the amount of meat. Now, that was only for us common people. There was really no shortage of any of those things. But they used this as a psychological gimmick to make us think that, of course, there were shortages and we all had to sacrifice it, part of the war effort. But I really believe that we're heading into a situation where there are going to be very, very real shortages. why they're occurring, whether they're occurring because they're intentionally modifying the weather or whether it's an act of God. We don't know because all of the information is classified. We see these new diseases sweeping certainly into our food supply, into the wheat supply. We see the disappearance of the bees. And we know that there are people out there who do have a plan to markedly eliminate countless billions of people because they believe in population control. They believe there are too many people on the earth. That's why, of course, we have funded the Chinese communist one-child policy by funding International Planned Parenthood. In fact, we fund population control programs all throughout the world, but the average individual has no idea what's going on. Anything else, Jeannie, you wanted to say?
No, I just like the website, and I'll listen to that off the air.
Okay, what's the website there? What's your website, David?
Oh, ReadyReserveFoods.com.
ReadyReserveFoods.com. We'll be back in just a moment. Okay, Dave, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
I'm urging your listeners to open their eyes, look around at the situation we're in financially here in the United States, the dynamics of what's happening, the things that you've taken for granted all along. I had a customer call me today that he had just read an article about Lake Mead. If it doesn't fill up within the next 4 to 5 years, it will never fill up again. And it's half full right now. I've talked about this once before on your program.
Where is Lake Mead?
Behind Hoover Dam, outside
right.
of Las Vegas.
Right.
The weather patterns are changing, whether they're man-made or not, the end result's still the same. It's going to affect food production, which is going to affect the cost, which is going to affect your life. Now, I'm urging your listeners to start opening their eyes, put away some food stores, put them as much as they could possibly do, and if you and I are wrong, Dr. Stan, and this thing all smooths out, you can go ahead and eat the food. It's not like you're throwing money away. You're going to eat. We're all going to eat. I'm going to eat tomorrow, so are you, and so are all your listeners. So, and we're probably going to, by this time next month, that food will cost a little more. So if anything, you're being prudent in buying the stuff while it's a little cheaper. Put it on your shelf. I'd prefer it if you bought it from Ready Reserve. But there are other ways. You can store food. Start filling up your pantries. And you'll be glad you did. I just this picture, this very complicated picture that I glean off the internet, off the news, what I see, what I know, just makes me think that there are going to be major, major problems come late summer. Demand for food is skyrocketing. The resources, everything is maxed out. And when do things break? Is when they're stressed out by running wide open. And one little break in this thing right now would drive it literally over the edge. That's really all I can urge you. I've just been watching this for many, many years, and My gut feeling is that we're in trouble.
Well, of course, I will tell you that David does call me off the air. We have a chance to talk, and repeatedly he's simply not trying to sell products. He's expressed his concern for the people of our country that they're not prepared for difficult times. David Sibley, thank you so much for being with us. It's always
thank
a
you.
Pleasure. Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening, David Sibley, Ready Reserve Foods. We do work with David, and if you'd like to get one of his catalogs, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. I believe that we are heading into very, very difficult times, and we urge people to begin making their preparations. If you've not yet gotten the DVD, Sheltering in Place, it's simply put together by some people who've been working in the civil defense programs for years. And the average citizen, if there was a nuclear, chemical, or biological attack on a country, a terrorist attack of some sort, or who knows what, but what would you do? Would you get in your car and drive out of town? Or where would you go to? know you're better off to stay right where you are, but to know how to prepare your home. And so we have a DVD called Sheltering in Place. That's Sheltering in Place. We have a four-tape set on civilian defense, talking to experts in this field about what you can do to look after yourself and your family if the unthinkable should actually happen. We have a book put out by the civilian defense system many years ago when they really were intent upon saving the lives of the American people. Now, of course, you have to understand the major thrust is population control. They don't want to save a lot of people. There really are people who believe there are too many people in the world, and if you haven't read my Population Control Agenda monograph, it's up on the internet at radioliberty.com. Pull it down and read it, or if you'd like to get a copy, we'll be glad to send you one. That's the Population Control Agenda monograph. It's the best thing, short thing that's out there available, and you need to read it. It's at radioliberty.com. But understand that, Sydney, if you want to protect your family, you're going to have to do it on your own. And, of course, the item you need is called Nuclear War Survival Skills. Nuclear War Survival Skills. And it's available through Radio Liberty. We have a book called Making the Best of Basics. It's basically, what would you do? Let's imagine that you really couldn't go down to the store and buy anything. If you had wheat, how would you prepare it? I mean, what would you do if suddenly the food was not readily available at the grocery stores? How would you survive? Well, you'd survive the way your grandparents survived. And this book, Making the Best of Basics, is a great book. I know my wife has read it, and she puts a great deal of credence in it. We actually got this in for the Y2K, but I believe what lies ahead is far worse than Y2K ever could have possibly been. So if you'd like to get these items, that's the DVD on Sheltering in Place, the four-tape or CD set on civilian defense, the book Nuclear War Survival Skills, and actually if you get that, you get a little kit that'll actually tell you how to build a radiation meter. The description is in the book, and we have all the material you want. That's the radiation meter that you can build yourself. Otherwise, you go out and buy them at a phenomenal price, but certainly this is very inexpensive. And then, of course, the book, Making the Best of Basics. If you'd like more information on them, suggest a donation. Our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. If you'd like to understand the mentality of the people who want population control, who intend to kill off most of our world's population, you need to get my DVD entitled None Dare Call It Genocide. Or a more advanced edition of that is our talk on planned population reduction. You certainly would want to get our sustainable development syllabus. You'll see pictures of the Georgia Guidestones. We're there in eight different languages. The plan is laid out. It's in Elberton, Georgia. And there they talk about maintaining the world population at 500 million in constant balance with nature. Doesn't sound too bad unless you stop and realize we're dealing with a world population of over 6 billion. That means they're going to have to kill off over 5.5 billion. You say that's straight crazy talk. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're not dealing with people who look at the world as we do. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection.